glad to have you on a Monday drive. You are listening to WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad, where the NFL just confirmed the reports we read last week that the 2023 schedule is going to drop Thursday night. Even though we already know who the opponents are, the placements of the games should be a strong indicator of determining when the Carolina Panthers are going to start Bryce Young. It's inevitable that he's going to start. We just don't quite know when. And we heard Scott Fitterer and Frank Reich say over the last week and change, Andy Dalton right now is the starter. Bryce is going to have to earn it. And those are kind of the things that you have to say. When the schedule's released Thursday, that's going to be a strong indicator. And there are two things that you should be keeping a close eye on in regards to the early part of the slate. Defense and destination. Those things both matter. The two Ds. Defense and destination. Starting with the destination piece. It's a lot easier to bring your rookie quarterback out when he's playing at home, not having to deal with crowd noise, versus if he had to go to New Orleans. If game one was in the Superdome, especially considering Andy Dalton played for the Saints this past year and he's a veteran. Or if you had to go to Seattle, who's one of the opponents this year, and you're playing that on the road. If you have that two out of your first three games, let's say, that's probably a bit daunting to expect a rookie quarterback to thrive right out of the gate versus if, say, the opener was against the Houston Texans at home. It's a little bit more manageable to start Bryce Young right out of the gate in terms of defenses. You don't want Bryce Young, the first time he steps out there, to be facing a lot of exotic blitzes and some of the best edge rushers there are in the sport. So there's a big difference in how manageable it is if, say, you're facing the Atlanta Falcons right out of the gate, who do not have a stud rusher that you have to be that worried about, versus, say, if you open up against Micah Parsons and the Cowboys, or if you open up against Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith with the Minnesota Vikings. These types of things should factor into the puzzle. When your bye week is, if they have a bye week early on in October, week four, week five, week six, it's easy to look at it and say, Bryce, you're going to sit for the first month and change and see how Andy handles things in the meetings. You're going to see how he handles himself as a veteran, as a starter, learn the ropes from him, so to speak. And then once the bye week hits, you're going to have 2 weeks to get ready for your first game. And you can handle it that way. You can roll him out a lot more slowly, and have a developed plan if you have an early bye week. We'll learn all of that on Thursday. Those are the things you should be keeping an eye on. And Carolina's in this type of position where they can pick and choose rather than just throw him out to the Wolves because they signed Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton understands the assignment. Andy was part of the top 30 visits for all of the quarterbacks Carolina was considering with the number one pick. They signed Andy Dalton, and Dalton signed with Carolina after they traded for the number one pick, not before. He knows what he's being asked to do. He's done it before, a couple of years ago. Andy Dalton was the guy that brought along Justin Fields after Fields was taken in the first round. So he gets it. But you can also win with Andy. You look at what the NFC South is right now. Frank Reich is going to be asking himself the question, which quarterback gives me the best chance to win right now? And it's not a cliche. He means it. Because the NFC South is up for grabs in a way I don't think I've seen it over the last couple of decades. That's what we're looking at this year. The betting favorite in the NFC South right now is the New Orleans Saints somehow.
Send me that cash out, family.
Oh, because they got Derek Carr? How daunting. The Atlanta Falcons are after that? Then it's the Panthers? That division is up for the taking. So they're going to want to play the best guy right out of the gate. He is a good insurance policy to have. Scott Fitterer was talking about this very thing with Mike Florio, a Pro Football Talk, reiterating what Frank Reich said, where Andy Dalton is the starter right out of the gate. This was Scott on the handling of Bryce Young.
we're going to rely on our coaches and the Jim Caldwell, Frank Bragg, Thomas Brown to decide when is right. We don't have a timeline. We're not saying, hey, this guy's going to start the first game or we're not going to play him at all this year. When the time is right, where we felt like he's got enough of the mastery of the offense, where he can go out and operate this and be successful, that's when he'll be out there. We went out and signed Andy Dalton for a reason. He played as a rookie. He's got a lot of experience. He understands his role. And, you know, we can play good football. If Andy's the guy to start the season and he's the starter right now heading into the season, then he'll be the guy. You know, we say it's open competition. But Frank did say, hey, Andy's our guy right now. He'll walk into the season as a starter. And then as, you know, the young guys compete underneath him, then they'll go in when they're ready.
The schedule will determine when Bryce Young becomes the starter. I think it's going to be clear what the best path is for the Panthers and for Bryce based on how the schedule looks Thursday. What type of defenses you're facing early on, where the bye week is, how many home games out of the gate versus how many games on the road you're looking at. All of that should factor into the equation. On Twitter at WSJS Radio, that is where we're streaming video and where you can chime in on the show. Streaming video in addition to YouTube and Twitch. Looking specifically at the YouTube viewers right now, thank you for all those subscribers that we picked up in just a 2-3 day span that forced me to wear what I got on right now, these overalls that I'll be wearing all week this week. WD, how do I look?
You look like you just got out of Merlefest. Yeah, I mean, not bad, though. It's going to be a little warm this week.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're already closing in on 350, so.
Will Dalton is the executive producer of the show, taking your calls at 336-777-1600. This is interesting. In the ACC basketball offseason, 13 starters have entered the portal and transferred elsewhere. 13 basketball starters in the ACC. 6 of those 13 starters transferred from one ACC school to another, including 2 yesterday that are the 2 most significant ACC transfers we've seen this offseason. Clemson adding Joe Girard from Syracuse, and this one, the most fascinating of all, Miami adding Matthew Cleveland from rival Florida State. Let's start with the Clemson piece of this. Joe Girard was the 6th leading scorer in the ACC. When you talk about high-volume 3-point shooters, you're talking about Girard. Cormac Ryan, we said, probably attempted too many threes with Notre Dame at 6 threes per game. Joe Girard shot 7 threes a game and was at a 38% clip from 3-point range. That is high efficiency. That is high volume. And they already have P.J. Hall coming back, who's an all-ACC guy. And Chase Hunter and Alex Hemingway. This team had a double bye in the ACC tournament this past year. Still didn't make the NCAAs, which is a joke, but you got that back, and you're adding Joe Girard, and you're adding Jack Clark from NC State, who is one of the best players off the bench, best 6 men in America, or at least in the ACC. Clemson having a really good offseason. In fact, NC State and Clemson might have had the best offseasons in the portal among ACC teams this year. The Matthew Cleveland piece is fascinating, not just because it's a rivalry we're talking about, but the last time we remember watching Matthew Cleveland do something of note for the Seminoles was when they rallied back against Miami and he hit a buzzer beater from 3 and did the whole you up, you down hands. Well, now you're a member of the Miami Hurricanes, which just went to their first Final Four. And we know they have a great collective down there. So I'm sure Matthew Cleveland, he's going to be doing all right. I thought he would have been the best wing option for North Carolina, even better than the guy they landed, Harrison Ingram from Stanford. But here's what's appealing about Miami in addition to the NIL, obvious attraction. We know that Isaiah Wong is off to the NBA. We know Anthony Miller's off to the NBA. Norchad Omier and Nigel Pack, they are testing the NBA waters, but both have decided to maintain their college eligibility. which means they both can come back. They'll have to decide sometime this month. Let's assume they come back. A big three of Omer, Nigel Pack, and Matthew Cleveland is one of the best big threes in the ACC right now. They instantly become a contender again, along with Duke and maybe Virginia, looking towards next year. And I'll even throw Clemson into that pie now that they added Joe Girard, which is a huge add. But this is the most surprising reaction I've seen to the news when I talk about those six, you know, ACC to ACC transfers out of the 13 starters that decided to enter the portal. Some are surprised by this. Why should you be? Like, if you are a player in the ACC who is transferring, wouldn't you want to transfer to a school you know a lot about? Campuses you've already visited? Fan bases you've already experienced? Personnel that you've already seen on the other side? And the same works for coaches. You'd want to recruit it because you know more about the players that you've had to scout. You know more about what they can do because you watched it with your own two eyes against your own team. So it makes too much sense. I look at it a different way. Too much sense that we see more ACC to ACC transfers than otherwise.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
I just tried to cross my legs, and I succeeded with the overalls on, but it was a chore. That took three quarters of the commercial break and amid the news and weather updates there to make that happen. Wearing overalls this week because we got 100 subscribers in just a couple of days after it took a month and a half to get 200 subscribers. Maybe later in the week we can discuss if there's something else we can do if we get to 500 or 1,000, but let's pocket that for now while I deal with this current discomfort. A lot of great things happened over the weekend in sports. To recap it the best way we know how, we attach letter grades to it in Graham's Grades.
Every week is a test for your favorite sports teams.
We don't need no education.
Who passed the test?
If one of y'all says some silly-ass name.
Who dropped the ball?
I don't know.
Josh Graham has the answers.
I think you're very condescending and a know-it-all.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Time for Graham's Grades.
A through F. We begin with the very good that we saw over the last 72 hours, and there seems to be an obvious choice.
A.
Charlotte FC on Saturday night. We got the entire radio station crew together, and we'll talk more about the specifics of that experience a little bit later on. Plus, a little bit later on this hour, your chance to win tickets to see the number one team in college baseball, Wake Forest for the first time ever, ranked number one in the country. Charlotte FC, though, 5 goals were scored in this match. A lot of excitement. Charlotte netted 3 of them, winning the game 3-2. It was a good environment at Bank of America Stadium, and Charlotte FC hasn't lost a match at home over the last 4 matches that they've had. Over their last 4 home matches. It was great. WD had a great time, his first time out there. We'll spend more time on Charlotte in just a little bit.
B.
The Orioles-Braves series. The only reason it's not an A is because I'm an Orioles fan and the Orioles ended up losing. They lost in 12 yesterday, and on Saturday it looked like they had it in hand, but because one of our better relievers, our setup guy, pitched 2 days before that, 35 pitches. Brandon Hyde wanted to have him on the shelf, so they went to another guy, and that other guy, of course, gave up a pinch hit, 2-run homer that quickly turned what looked like was going to be a 4-3 win into a 5-4 loss. The Braves, we knew they were going to be a legit World Series contender this year, and they looked the part. They have the second best record in baseball right now. They were at home. They probably should have won the series. But the fact that Baltimore hung with them the way that they did tells me that the record they have is legitimate, and WD, they're going to get a chance to prove how legitimate that is, because tonight marks the start of a three-game series with the Tampa Bay Rays for Baltimore. O's, Braves, that was a really fun series. It's all right, Braves fans. We'll just see you guys in the World Series. Well,
oh boy.
Even it up then. Well, you can have this series
in
May. You
sound like a Yankee fan right now.
Yeah. You can have this series in May. We'll take the one in late October, early November.
C.
A little bit of sarcasm there. I'm an Orioles fan. I know where we are in the food chain. The Carolina Hurricanes are a C. They're up 2-1. They packed out PNC Arena on Friday night. It was great to be there for that. But then they got blasted yesterday. 3-0 in the first, and then early on in the second, it's 4-0. You're making a goaltending change, and you end up losing this hockey game. I turned it off going into the third. I didn't want to watch anything more. So when I saw the final was 8-4, I was like, all right, fine. And the reason it's a C is, well, whether you lose 2-1 or 8-4, only counts for one for the Devils, and you're still up 2-1 with a chance to go up 3-1 if you can win tomorrow night in game four. Everything that Carolina wanted to do is still on the table, part of the plan. We got more hockey in a bit, but the Hurricanes, they're a C. It's meh.
D.
The Wells Fargo Championship. It's an elevated event with an elevated purse. So you think that one of the bigger names would win it. And you got Xander Schauffele in the final group. But aside from that, who was really all that close? Adam Scott was kind of lingering there for a little bit. Wyndham Clark wins his first ever PGA Tour event. And there really wasn't that much drama at the end. So you don't get a big name winning it. And you don't really have that much of an exciting final round either, which is not... Both those things are the things you're not looking for if you're running a golf tournament and you're being obvious about it or being honest about it. However, Wyndham Clark would be an awesome guy to have win the Wyndham Championship later this year in Greensboro. Let's let that be so.
F.
It's only one team this could be. The Toronto Maple Leafs are an F. WD, I want you to picture the mindset of a Toronto fan. Hockey is life there. The way that soccer is everything, it's like all of our popular sports rolled into one in terms of popularity in Europe. That's what the Maple Leafs are in the city of Toronto, even though the Blue Jays play there, even though they have the Raptors. The Maple Leafs dominate, and they haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967. They haven't been to a Stanley Cup since the early 1990s. You have to go back a really long way to find the last time that that happened. And here you are with a very good hockey team taking care of business in round one. And you don't have to face the Boston Bruins in round two. You got the miracle of draws.
Boston.
You don't have to face Boston in round two. That means you have home ice in a series against an 8 seed, the Florida Panthers. They have to come to your place for 2 games. It's everything you want. They lose both the games at home. They lose their last two in overtime, including last night's game three. You're down 3-0 to the Florida Panthers after you caught the biggest break ever of not having to face Boston.
Boston.
That. You might just be cursed. You just might be cursed, Toronto. Wow. I'm kicking myself for not listening to Toronto Sports Radio all day today just to hear what those phone callers sound like. It's like polite Alabama football fans on Feinbaum show after a loss. I don't know who Canadian Paul is.
I don't either.
I hope his name is like Saul to make it biblical. Well, listen here. Saul! That was a tough one, eh? Tough one for... I don't know why I made him sound like the little boy in Willy Wonka.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory?
The newer or the older one?
Either.
I love the newest one, with Johnny Depp.
That came out 20 years ago. The old one's a lot better than that. Anyway, that's been Gramps Greats. Now all I can picture, just super polite Canadian sports talk. Saul, we might need a goaltending change, you hoser. Yeah, well, this isn't working, eh? It's really tough. Saul! It's really, really tough, eh?
Have a golden ticket.
This is it. You ready?
All right, hold on.
All right, do it.
All right, listen up.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham.
What a time it is to be a sports fan in the city of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. The Wake Forest baseball program was ranked number one in the country today. It is the first time ever since those polls existed that Wake has been number one. It's incredibly special. If you know your ACC history, you might remember that the Deacs won the ACC's first ever national championship in baseball a couple years after the ACC's founding in 1955. They were first. I don't think until Virginia won a national championship in 2015, that the ACC had another ACC baseball championship or a national championship for one of its baseball programs. You can double check me on that, but I believe that's accurate. And Wake Forest hasn't been to Omaha since 1955. This might be the year that that happens. So that's incredibly special. And by the way, we have a pair of tickets to give away tomorrow, courtesy of our friends at East Coast Wings and Grill, to watch Tom Walter's group face UNCG. So it's Winston-Salem versus Greensboro. Billy Godwin is the head coach at UNCG. Knew him when he was East Carolina's manager back in the day. They made the NCAA tournament last year, so this could be a good game. Good midweek game tomorrow. It's not to say that UNCG doesn't have a shot. Let's not forget, Elon knocked off Wake Forest in a midweek game just a few weeks ago. But Wake Forest is number one. WD, how should we give away these tickets? Any ideas? Anything fun? Or are we going to do the call number five type deal?
It might have to be a call number five deal. You want to go? We got them.
Then I'm going to make it as inconvenient for you as possible.
Yeah.
Caller seven. Call number seven. 336-777-1600. Is the phone number. If you'd like to see the number one team in the country tomorrow night play for the first time in their history as the number one team in the country tomorrow night against UNCG, be caller number seven at 336-777-1600. And this is the behind baseball thing or inside baseball thing that the audience can't see, but maybe you can see on YouTube. We only have like three... For phone callers in the audience, we only have like three different pots. So that means you have to go through each of these a couple of times and then get another to come in. So however you figure that out behind the scenes, let you do that.
So how do I get to a seventh caller?
Oh, you clearly haven't been an intern taking calls back in the day. You got to tell them, hey, you're caller number one. Sorry. Hey, you're caller number two. Sorry. Hey, you're caller number three. And then see... open those lines back up. I'm coaching you how to do radio behind the scenes. So caller number seven, caller number seven. That's going to be your winner for Wake baseball tickets tomorrow. And I'd like to know the caller's name at the end of this. Okay?
This is ridiculous.
Just going to let WD go through this. If I really wanted to make it easy and be on brand, I'd say, hey, they're the number one team in the country. How about caller number one? Nope. Seven.
Two to go.
Seven. So WD is now trying to talk to me while fielding calls. And I think there's You might have your winner out of one of those over there. I think he's finally figured it out. What's the name of our winner, WD? Tell me his name. Show your face. We want to see your face. Brought to you by East Coast Wings and Grill. So that's one reason why things are fantastic being a sports fan in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. What's the name of our winner?
Caller number 7, reveal yourself.
Who is caller 7? No!
Yeah!
It's Beth in Greensboro who has the impression.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Congratulations,
hey, I'm
Beth.
Good. Thank you. And also, I've got another good one. Kernersville.
Oh, is that Stephen A. Smith? Wow.
I'm full of them.
I appreciate you, Beth in Greensboro. Enjoy the game tomorrow. There she goes. Huge fan of the show that understands all the drops that are in front of WD as well. Now getting to the other reason why. Winston-Salem, it's a great time to be a sports fan in Winston. The Carolina Thunderbirds can win a championship tonight. So it's a best of five Commissioner's Cup. If you haven't been following this, the Carolina Thunderbirds have just been a wagon this year. And we've been happy partnering alongside them. At home, at the Annex, Friday night and Saturday night, packed houses. They won both those games handedly, which means this is where it stands right now, WD. It's a best of five series. They're up 2 games to 0, which means if the Thunderbirds don't lose 3 in a row on the road, they will be champions.
Which they won't.
Well, don't jinx it now.
But I just knocked on wood, so there you go.
You don't have any wood in there. You'll have to tap the door. Go tap the door. Go tap the door. Gonna say things like that. Unbelievable.
People just out in the extra lobby probably have no clue why I just knocked on the door.
I'm just extra.
It's new out there.
You know, they have the show on out there. They probably do.
They'll figure it out.
Just so, I'm very irritable today because I've got these overalls on.
It's kind of funny.
It's uncomfortable. Shout out to the Carolina Thunderbirds. Best of luck tonight. What a time for the city of Winston-Salem and really for North Carolina hockey as well. I was at the Canes game on Friday night and it was thank you for that. I was at the Canes game Friday night and I can't tell you how many people came up to me asking, hey dude, how about your Thunderbirds? You're not at the Thunderbirds game tonight? Oh, the Thunderbirds, they about to clinch? Everybody's fired up about the Thunderbirds and about the Carolina Hurricanes as well. There used to be this thing 10 years ago when I was just about a dozen years ago when I was breaking into sports radio around here. One of the number one rules we were told, don't talk too much about hockey, is what we were told. People don't say that anymore because people get the sport, they follow the sport, and it's a special thing to see both the Hurricanes and the Thunderbirds doing their thing. The coolest thing that happened this weekend across the country, though, happened in L.A. on Saturday night, where Bronny James announced he had committed, this is LeBron's son, to USC. He chose USC over Oregon. Obviously, LeBron has that partnership with Nike and, you know, a great relationship with Phil Knight, that's his alma mater, and Ohio State, which is the school that LeBron still roots for. That's the college that LeBron roots for. Bronny chose USC and remaining in Southern California. And this is, number one, great for college basketball. Like, how many times are people just going to watch USC basketball to see if LeBron's sitting courtside or to watch him? I'd love if they play at Cameron this year. How cool would that be to
so
get
cool.
Coach K and LeBron sitting next to each other at a game? Getting USC on the schedule, that'd be really super cool to see. It's great for college basketball for that reason. He's a name that people will want to follow. We'll see if the productivity matches the how noteworthy his name is. But then you had LeBron's reaction after beating Golden State in Game 3. This is a post-game interview he did with the LA TV station that carries the Lakers. And he took it in a different direction.
One of the best days of my life. First of all, congratulations to Bronny on his decision he made. You know, I'm super proud of him. Our family is proud of him. For me personally, it's even more special to me because it's the first time someone out of my family to go to college. Obviously, I didn't go to college either. So it's just a proud moment to see my son go to college, and he's the first one to go to college in my family. So super-duper proud, super emotional, but just super, super-duper excited and happy for his journey. And today was a proud day. I couldn't lose today. No matter the outcome of this game, I couldn't lose today personally.
Pretty cool. Jim Phillips, hey, is that alliance still a thing whatsoever, or did USC and UCLA bailing nuke that?
I have tremendous respect for Commissioner Phillips.
We can't play that drop anymore. Josh Pazner, he's no longer, I don't know if he has respect for Jim Phillips anymore now that he's not in the ACC anymore. He probably wouldn't say that. I don't know. But Jim Phillips, hey, if that alliance is still a thing, can we figure out a way to get USC on some ACC schedules? I'm asking for a meet. That'd be something I appreciate. Pretty cool that Ronnie James is going to be playing in college basketball and playing at USC.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
Our friend Wes Durham. Haven't heard from him in a while. Back on the show with us, noted fan of the singing jingle, rejoining us in the triad. Do I have that right? Is that the right title for you, Wes?
Noted fan of the singing jingle? Yeah, I'll take that one. I'll sign up for that.
Understood. A lot of stuff going on. I've been great. Just, you know, I think college sports, college basketball would be great, and media partners as well, to fully embrace the month of April, the way that the NBA approaches July, given all the stuff that's happening, because 13 ACC basketball starters over the last month have entered the portal, and six of the 13 that have found destinations have transferred within the ACC. And Joe Girard goes to Clemson from Syracuse over the weekend. We learn about Matthew Cleveland as well, transferring from, well, this is interesting, Florida State to Miami after beating them at the buzzer just a couple of months ago. And when I look at these two rosters, Wes, these are both teams that had double byes in the ACC this past year. We'll have to wait on Norchad Omier and Nigel Pack to see if they will choose to return to college or after testing the waters to keep their name in the draft. And I think the same applies to PJ Hall. But PJ Hall, Jack Clark, who came from NC State, I mean, Alex Hemingway, Chase Hunter, these rosters, in either case, look like they're ready to roll with the additions of Girard and Cleveland. Are those the two biggest ACC basketball transfers to date right now?
Don't forget, don't ever undersell that we had kind of our first unofficial, unauthorized trade in the ACC when Middlebrooks and Clark moved within 90 minutes of each other. I mean, I don't think we ever got the official release from Greensboro ratifying the trade with Clemson and NC State, or if there's some condition to the trade where
NC State got a player to be named later.
Yeah,
I think
Brad Brownell or Kevin Keats gets a home game later in a rotate. Who knows? But we joke about it and we laugh about it. But, and it's funny, I just talked to an athletic director this afternoon about the portal, and we were measuring impact in portal. Like, okay, in basketball, if you have, let's take a number, seven guys in the portal. Okay, if you have seven in the portal, how many high school guys can you then go recruit? You know, what's your tack going to be? Because I guess what I'm getting around to is, I think both John Shire and Hubert Davis said during the course of the basketball season that they had to look at the composition of their 13 scholarships every year, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that we've now come to the conclusion after watching this portal go down again that we have to assess how many kids are actually going to be on scholarship every year in major college basketball, because for a coach at a major institution or even a mid-major institution to put 13 guys on scholarship is probably going to come back to haunt him, because not everybody's going to end up being happy and somebody's going to get in the portal right at the end of the day. I mean, the numbers themselves, Josh, have been staggering now for a couple of years, and the percentage of conversion, like the most horrific number is going to come out at some point that, you know, some abstract number, let's just say 1,800 and some kids were in the portal at one point, and only, you know, 54 or 57% or whatever the number is of those kids found homes. So the other 40-odd percent hypothetically just walked off on their college education.
Wow, yeah.
And I don't care what anybody says, that's a tragedy.
That's
a tragedy to what they had for free at one point and elected to walk off on it because Uncle Claude thought they could go get more minutes playing somewhere else.
Since you brought up the coach's comments about composition of roster, could you see, like, we see coaches benefiting from coaching in the extremes in college sports,
sure.
Like the way that Virginia plays its pace, or maybe a good example in football would be the way that the late Mike Leach played football for all those years at Texas Tech and then at Washington State. And most recently at Mississippi State, could you see a high major coach looking at the way he constructs his roster and saying, I'm just not going to recruit high school players. I'm only going to recruit through the portal.
I think it'd be dangerous, but sure. Why not? I mean, what's Deion Sanders getting ready to try and do?
That's going to be a fascinating instrument.
Okay, but
experiment. Imagine,
let's just say that was basketball. 60-odd of his 85 scholarships are gone. Is that right from last year?
Mm-hmm.
Like 69 or something like that?
That's right.
Some crazy number? Okay. So what's the percentage? I don't have a calculator in front of me. 69 into 85. What's that percentage?
That is like about 6 out of 8. Or maybe, about 6 out, more than two-thirds. So, yeah, math majors
so
here.
Let's ratio that to 13 scholarships.
Yeah.
So is that replacing 9 of your 13 scholarships?
About that.
Okay. So now all of a sudden, Deion Sanders is, if he were coaching basketball at Colorado, bless. But if he were, he'd be looking for 9 guys.
Steve Forbes got 6 2 years ago.
And Steve Forbes is a genius at this.
How many has Kevin Keats landed? 5 this offseason so far?
Kevin Keats, I'm going to say that you and I have had this discussion, I think, in one semblance before. Steve Forbes' junior college acumen is perfect.
And Keats.
And Kevin Keats' junior college prep school acumen is perfect.
Not a coincidence.
The other thing Kevin Keats and Steve Forbes both have that I think is critical is they have mid-major, low Division One experience, one bid leagues, CAA, Southern Conference, those things. I think all that plays into it. I'll tell you another guy who I've got a ton of respect for the way he builds his team at the low Division One level is Tim Kraft at Gardner Webb. He'd be a great guest for you to have on talking about this.
Former Pirate assistant.
He is. And Tim Kraft is a guy who he talks about the Division Two portal players. I think he got the leading score at Catawba last year, who was the freshman of the year in Conference Carolinas to transfer to Gardner-Webb and play for him. He got 2 guys from Belmont Abbey to transfer. I think that's I hate to say this because I'm old enough that I grew up on the old college basketball, right? Those days, I'm afraid, Josh, are gone. And look, I guess there was a possibility at times that, you know, Dontrez Styles was thinking about potentially going from Carolina to NC State, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that didn't happen. He went to Georgetown. And it's fun to joke around about a guy going from one rival to the other. We just saw it. Matthew Cleveland.
The reverse Bones McKinney, I think, is how that is described.
Yeah. Well, get ready because one day somebody at Duke's going to go to Carolina or vice versa.
We just saw Matthew Cleveland.
You just saw, that's what I'm saying. You just saw Matthew Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
So
is this good for the product? So you're talking about product stuff and what the coach's perspective of things are. From a basketball fan's perspective, like the people listening to our conversation right now, is this a good thing talking about, you know, the ACC players first off being allowed to transfer within, you know, the ACC.
You can't take it back. Don't come at me with, well, that's going to stop.
No. I don't think it's going to. But now that we know what it is, though, like, I think this is, it makes things exciting. And knowing guys can come back because of NIL when before they'd be leaving, like these are juicy storylines for us to consume as ACC basketball sure. fans, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But it, you know, we're almost out of the bonus years. We're almost out of the Mark Emmert, Oprah Winfrey, everybody gets a car years, okay? Because we're running out of those after next year. Next year is the last year of the bonus year for sports. But remember when he handed out without acknowledging or checking with the institutions on their scholarship monies, if he could hand out free years, they just handed them out. Well, that you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
This is the last year coming up. So we won't have the Mark Emmert bonus year, you know, to kick around anymore. So you'll have to play your five. You'll play four and five if you want a red shirt. But, you know, you can – and then, see, we'll also go back to the portal, technically, unless you graduate. See, that's the other part, too. You have the grad transfer. So what you see now is this proliferation of schools that are creating one-year graduate certificates.
Oh, yeah.
At their institution. Because, like, I'll tell you, and next time you have Roddy Jones on, ask him how close he was to not getting into MBA school at Georgia Tech to play, quote, his last year. Okay? Mm-hmm. North Carolina was not an automatic. Mack Brown, I think, has talked about, you know, we haven't been able to get guys necessarily as grad transfers because we could not get them into grad school. Well, that now schools have, and imagine this. We've created these grad certificates so they can have grad transfers. Here's the other thing you don't ever hear about anymore. When's the last time you heard somebody flunked out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't remember the last time we heard that.
Yeah.
It used to be every year there was somebody.
I cracked up a group of people a week ago at an event, and I said, by the way, has anybody flunked out lately? Everybody just shook their head and started laughing, said, no, nobody's flunked out. But, boy, cats have changed for the price, though, haven't they?
No doubt. Well,
yeah, we've had guys change address this year simply on the dollars too, and I think we got to be real. Josh, the number one thing I would say to fans and longtime ACC fans, especially the ones in your market and in the state of North Carolina, is we got to get comfortable with getting uncomfortable because I'm afraid that's just what this is going to be at least for a while.
Wes Durham's with us here. Well, I got you. See, since you are a voice in the NFC South for the Atlanta Falcons. You talk about the experimenting we're seeing in college basketball. The experiment the Carolina Panthers just took at number one in the sense of how short and how thin Bryce Young is. It's talked about, bandied about quite a bit. Well, he's the number one pick in the draft, and the NFL schedule is going to be released on Thursday. So I just, starting here, how much do you think the placement of these games, knowing the opponents, we know the opponents right now, but we don't know the placement. Right. How might that impact the way the Panthers choose to handle Bryce in terms of bye week, in terms of opponents early on? Does it have an impact, you think?
Start him week one. Start him. He's a savant. He's really good now, okay? I mean, that Will Levis thing was absolutely hilarious when that came out, by the way. By the way, did you get a day and a half out of that?
Inside sources, yeah. Reddit.
Reddit. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's good.
My source of Will Levis not being the guy was running into Scott Fitterer at in Knoxville when Will Levis threw three interceptions and threw for 98 yards against a so-so secondary, and that being the only time he saw Will Levis in person. That was my source.
I'm gonna offer you this. I would let Bryce Young. And I'm also, by the way, I jokingly today at a charity golf event told somebody, I think the Falcons and Panthers will play week one.
Yeah.
Because it's been a long time since Atlanta opened with a division game. And the last time they did at home, so I wouldn't be surprised if we're week one in Charlotte. I would say this. I think you're going to see Bryce Young week one. I think he will win the job in training camp. And I'm kind of excited. I thought they gave up. I wouldn't have traded DJ Moore. It happened. But you've retained all that you had defensively. I still feel like defensively you're really good. But I'd let him go week one. And I'm not saying that if they do or don't play Atlanta. I'm just saying that because I think that's the way you got to treat it. I saw it happen with Matt Ryan, and he gave Atlanta 13 and a half great years here. And I would say that's exactly what Charlotte should do, and Frank Reich's the perfect guy to do it with. I think he's got a veteran staff who can process it. I know Dom Capers is involved in that defensive plan, which is huge. I would say let Bryce Young have the ball week one. Absolutely. No question.
I would. It'd be pretty exciting if they did.
I think, look, he's a savant. You go and watch him. Look at the plays he made at Alabama in the Bill O'Brien formation packages. And by the way, I think that had a lot to do with him being selected one,
yep,
because that offense is exactly what Frank Reich's going to do. So I don't think the jump for Bryce Young is nearly what the jump is going to be for some of these other cats. Like Anthony Richardson's jump
is huge.
Shane Steichen's a really good coach, but I think you're talking about a bigger jump for Anthony Richardson than you are Bryce Young. I think C.J. Stroud will be terrific playing in Houston, by the way. But I would give Young the ball absolutely week one.
Yeah.
No questions asked, in my opinion.
Wes Durham, no questions asked. It's
We're
good to hear your voice.
We're going to give Robinson the ball in week one in Atlanta, by the way. We're going to let him touch it
a
lot in week one.
It was funny. As soon as Bijan Robinson was the pick, we were at Steel Hands Brewing across the street from the Coliseum for an event, draft event, and there were a handful of Panther fans that like audibly winced when Bijan Robinson was the pick, just thinking about how many yards Bijan's going to go off of this Panthers defense on the next few years.
Well, look, Atlanta is no secret, but what Atlanta can do now that they really haven't been able to do since the glory days of Ryan and Turner and Julio Jones and kind of Devontae Freeman, right?
Yeah.
Is Atlanta has not been able to formation you into a trap, and now they can.
Oh, Michael Turner, that's another Panthers killer.
But don't forget 6'7 Mac Hollins on one side, 6'5 Drake London on the other, and this unicorn Kyle Pitts in the middle.
ACC legend, North Carolina legend, Mac Hollins, you mean.
Dude, Mac Hollins was a beast in Chapel
Hill. He was.
There's nobody more excited than me and Tyler Vespolis that Mac Hollins got.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Wes Durham, it's good to hear your voice, and I hope to see you sometime
soon.
I'll see
you at the Deeks. Are Deeks number one today in college?
Number one in the country, yeah. Wes.
Yep. I'm excited to be part of the ACC network coverage of the ACC baseball tournament in Durham.
Let's party like it's 1955, Wes.
Yeah, get George Greer, Bobby Miranda, get some of the old Deeks from that ACC tournament. Remember when they used to just sledgehammer the ACC tournament every year?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to get Rhett Lowder.
Oh, Milton.
We're going to get all these cats. It's going to be like, Bill Scripture. Let's get the Bill Scripture photos ready to go.
And you got to throw more than 120 pitches if you're a starter. That's the requirement.
Rhett Lowder now. Rhett Lowder is going to look great in a big league jersey with the flow he's got.
Yeah, just don't ruin him in college.
He's got great hair when Trevor Lawrence is envious of a kid's hair.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
Yeah.
Wes Durham from Cartersville, as is Trevor Lawrence. Thanks for the shout.
See,
it's good to hear.
Be
yeah,
well.
See you later. There goes Wes Durham joining us. We could talk for hours.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
Do NASCAR fans wear overalls to races? I've been to races. I've never seen NASCAR fans wearing overalls, but I'm wearing overalls right now because I lost that bet with all of you that subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you haven't already, search The Drive with Josh Graham on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor, but we're talking about the YouTube channel for now. However, and wherever you are listening or watching, we appreciate that. And the reason I asked that question in the context of racing, this is a historic month that we're looking at for racing here in the state of North Carolina. Yes, you've got Bowman Gray, which got fired up in the last few weeks in right here in the Triad, but up the road, less than 2 weeks away, you've got the 17-year drought that will end of NASCAR races not being run at the old racetrack at North Wilkesboro, and you have the All-Star race. So that should be a biblical crowd that they expect out that way in just a few weeks. And then after that, not much time to rest between then and the Coca-Cola 600, which is firmly planted on that Memorial Day weekend that we look forward to the week after that. And here to talk about it with us is NASCAR superstar Kyle Busch. Kyle, there aren't many more first things to do for you left, given how long you've been in the sport. But running a race at North Wilkesboro will be one of those things in less than 2 weeks' time. What excites you the most about the All-Star race?
Yeah, no, thanks. Appreciate you having us on. It's it's a unique opportunity there with the All-Star race at North Wilkesboro. And, you know, you got to commend Dale Jr., SMI, and all the guys on the collaborative effort to revive that track and bring it back. So, you know, it's a place that stood dormant for a long time. And, you know, I remember the days of watching it on TV with Earnhardt and Bodine, or Earnhardt and Gordon, or, you know, Terry Labonte and the Iron Man car. Jeff Gordon won the last race there. So, it's pretty cool to see that place come back. And, you know, that no asphalt's been paved on that place for a long, long time, for as long as I know anyways. And the drivers that have tested there have all said it's going to be like racing on ice. So we're going to have our hands full.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the late 1940s, early 1950s to find the last time that that's been paved. I saw Dale Jr. said a couple months ago that he's not going to be racing it. And obviously you have like the four that are going to be there from Hendrick Motorsports. Anyway, have you tried to needle Dale at all to figure out a way for him to be a part of it?
No, not really. I thought he was going to run the late model race on Wednesday, mm-hmm. but as far as him being a part of the All-Star race, I think he's sort of, given up the cup aspect of it. And of course, too, you know, any of the big teams, you're only allowed to have four cars anyway. So, it wouldn't be a Hendrick car that he would be able to race. But overall, I don't know. He didn't even race there, I guess, back in the day. So, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, there was that race last year that was special before the All-Star announcement where he brought out the late model, you know, number three Sundrop car, and they had a big crowd out for that. You made your first visit there before they started running races. I don't know. Were you part of that group that snuck out to catch some of the late models or something like that? Or tell me about visiting North Wilkesboro for the first time.
Yeah, the first time I visited there was for a commercial shoot, actually. So, it was at nighttime, so I really didn't get a chance to look around or see much of the area. It's pretty dark out there during nighttime, but, you know, it was just cool to kind of hear the old sounds. There was the old signboard was still rotating just from the wind, and you could hear it kind of like screeching, you know, the old rusty sound of the signboard making circles, you know, so it was kind of funny to hear that. They also told me and showed me too the car lift that takes the winner's car up on top of the roof in the infield still works to today. So I'm sure they're pumped about being able to utilize that again for the winner this time. Hopefully it's us.
Kyle Busch. Oh, that'd be really great if it were the case with us here on WSJS. You've got that race, and then you also have the Coca-Cola 600 later this month, too. You're from Las Vegas, and Vegas has the reputation of being this city of tourists and transplants, but the more I talk to people who are from there, it's actually a pretty cool sports town, the way that they follow the fights and UNLV and all of that, and it's only growing with the Golden Knights, and now they're going to get the Oakland A's in just a few years. But let's keep it with you. Growing up in Vegas, what was your sports fandom like? What did it look like, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, I was there obviously before the sports teams came on the scene. So for me, you know, I grew up in Vegas being a Denver Broncos football fan. You know, they're from not too far up the road in Colorado there. So, it seemed like all my buddies were Cowboys fans or Chargers fans or 49er fans, you know. So I was like, oh, I don't want to be one of those guys. And then I ended up meeting John Elway, who came to town one time and signed autographs and was able to meet him and became a fan of the Broncos. And so just kind of been that way ever since. But it's really cool to see, the Raiders come to town. As you mentioned, the A's looking to come to town. So it's going to be unique for the city. You know, it's certainly grown over the years with drivers, myself, Brendan Gaughan, Noah Gragson, my brother, of course, too, you know, who have come out of there, as well as, you know, other sports superstars like Andre Agassi. And, you've got Bryce Harper, a couple other baseball guys, too. So pretty cool to have that.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. Kyle Busch joining us here. Do we still got you, Kyle?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, last thing for you. On that note, so around here and I grew up in the state of North Carolina, full disclosure, so you obviously have all the history in your backyard. I was talking to Ryan McGee about this actually recently. The Memorial Day weekend, it was just, you know, firmly planted in the calendar as being perhaps the best day on the sports calendar for race fans there is when you talk about the Indy 500 and you talk about the 600. I don't know if that's a North Carolina-centric thing or if it applied to you growing up and getting into motorsports, but what does the 600 and really that Memorial Day Sunday mean to you?
No, I think it's really cool. Any motorsports enthusiast always tunes in early in the morning, watches the Monaco race, and then tunes over to the Indy 500 and then the Coke 600. So I remember those days as a kid growing up watching all three races for years. So, you know, I still try to do it even to today. You know, I try to get up in the morning and watch a little bit of Monaco and kind of see that, although it's more of a just a historic watch than it is from an entertainment perspective. You know, they don't really race a whole lot or pass a whole lot there. It's really tough and really narrow. But overall, I just enjoy the Indy 500, seeing those guys run around there. They're devils in their own right. It's cool to see that. And then, of course, we get a chance to go race in the Coke 600 at night.
Kyle, really do appreciate the time. Soak in what's going to be a really special weekend in just a couple of weeks. We'll look forward to seeing you out on the track.
Sounds great. Appreciate it. Yeah, man.